You just heard the NYC Urbana Slam team with their piece Running a Race, which I felt was really appropriate to today's conversation that we've been having with Terry Tempest Williams. And as we move into the public participatory reading that was offered here on the Palouse, just this notion that we can all be a part of, that we can all do something, that in fact we do not have to, metaphorically speaking, keep running this race, right? We can stop and have some stillness and reconsider where we are. And as Terry mentioned, just so prophetically, that each of us has a gift, and to be able to move forward utilizing that, to celebrate and experience that and contribute that back in our role in community here on the Palouse, I really feel like we have that ability, even so much more so perhaps in some places I've lived. And of course, there are so many regions around the world where this is happening in so many beautiful ways. And ours is just, I think, yet another where we see this at work, where we see community at work, and we see people celebrating uniqueness and the ability to come together. So from here, we're going to move on into, and welcome back to Yin Radio, I should say. This is Yin Radio on 90.3 KRFP. We are... We did some recordings at the 1912 Center, and so one of the most recent projects that Terry and Brooke were working on is, it was republishing the book by Robert Jeffries called The Story of My Heart, and I'm not going to do too much to introduce it because there are introductions that I have recorded that do a much better job than I will. However, just so you know, the 1912 Center, what happened was there was a reading in which all people who attended had the ability to come up and speak. And so the first part of what you're going to hear here is an introduction from various people into the readings. And then what I've done is compiled the, so some people chose to read out of sequence, and that added a beautiful flavor to it. But in terms of radio listening, and to be able to give you a sense of this book and to drift into that lullaby quality of being read to, I wanted to splice back together the continuous sounds of it. So first, what you'll get is about 25-minute span after we do the introductions, where you'll hear various voices from our community coming up to read from this work, and that will give you a sense of both the work and, again, just a sense of being read to by members of your own community, which is in and of itself such a beautiful experience. So we'll go first to Scott Slovic's introduction, and he is a wonderful professor of mine, as I mentioned before, who I owe a deep gratitude to for introducing me to Terry Tempest Williams' work, to Terry herself, and to organizing this event and everything that he has done to organize in the arts and literature of the environment. It's just been amazing to be a part of this academic community and find out more about what is going on. And he's really, as Terry mentions in the in one of the recordings, he is the bedrock for the work that's being done on this front. So here we go, an introduction to the participatory reading that was held at the 1912 Center earlier this week on Monday. And this introduction is given by Scott Slovic, a professor at the University of Idaho, and I hope you enjoy.
It's wonderful to see all of you here this evening for our very special event. My name is Scott Slovic, and I am a faculty member and department chair in the English department at the University of Idaho. Participation, engagement, love of language, and the natural world. These ideas come to mind immediately when we think of our special guests tonight, Terry Tempest Williams and Brooke Williams. Terry and Brooke, writers, teachers, naturalists, and activists, represent the very best of the contemporary renaissance of environment-oriented writing and thinking in American culture. I know that many of you are familiar with their deeply moving books, such as Refuge, An Unspoken Hunger, Leap, Half-Lives, Red, and Finding Beauty in a Broken World. Last week, in my courses on environmental writing and eco-criticism at the University of Idaho, I discussed Terry's 2012 book, When Women Were Birds, with my students, and a number of students came up after each class to tell me how moved they were by this astonishing book. This kind of reaction, this sense of making a deep personal connection with someone else's writing, doesn't happen every day, but it does when we read the work of these two writers, Terry and Rook. They have a special gift for making us pay attention to words and the world, and a gift for paying attention, such attention themselves, and for caring. And that brings us here for tonight's unusual event. This will not be, as I said earlier, a typical passive reading, a kind of experiment, actually. A typical reading where the distinguished visitors take the stage and the rest of us sit back and quietly listen. Participation, engagement, love of language, and the natural world. These shared values brought Terry and Rook to Jeffrey's The Story of My Heart in a bookshop in New England several years ago, as Terry explains in her introduction to the 2014 edition published by Torrey House Books. They purchased an antique edition of the book and became, as Terry puts it in her introduction, and as I think Brooke will explain in a few minutes, obsessed with Jeffrey's words, reading the book aloud to each other and deciding to create a new edition of it, not really editing or changing the original book, but rather curating a beautiful edition that looks as if it had been published in Jeffrey's own time in a beautiful Victorian-style binding, but with new commentary by Terry and Brooke. They actively participated in Jeffrey's work by reading it aloud to each other and by interacting with the text in coordinating this new edition. So tonight, I would like to provide an opportunity for us not only to hear Terry and Brooke talk about and read from Jeffrey's work, but for as many other people as possible who have copies or who are able to pick up copies of Jeffrey's book to fill this room with their own reading voices.
That was Scott Slovic introducing the participatory reading of The Story of My Heart. And next you'll hear Terry Tempest Williams introducing the way in which they had, she and her husband Brooke had actually found this book at an old bookstore and giving a little more context to the upcoming reading.
There's a wonderful village called Stonington. Perhaps some of you have been there. There's a great old bookstore called Prints and Reprints run by a fabulous woman named Jackie Burnett, who sits buried behind books with her glasses down by her nose. We always love to go there. They have a special section on Edith White, one of my favorite books in the world. The Wild Iris I found there. That was one of Edith White's stories as he was advancing the United Nations as a concept. But this particular day, there was this wonderful corner mahogany bookshelf. On water almost. And there I was struck by a very small book, not fancy, kind of a beige linen construction cover. It had a gold embossed cross and a crown, which I thought was interesting. And then in very simple letters, The Story of My Heart. Of course, the boldness of that title caught my attention. I started flipping through the pages, and I have to tell you, my eyes have no fidelity whatsoever. If they want to go somewhere else, they do. But they had enormous fidelity to this text. And as I started reading paragraph after paragraph, I kept thinking, who is this writer? And look back, Richard Jeffries, 1883. I absolutely fell in love and read in place for over half an hour. A friend of mine said, what on earth are you doing? And I said, have you ever heard of this man? We started reading out loud. Let's get it. We can continue reading out loud. It was $75. We didn't have it. We put it back. We left. And I couldn't get it out of my mind. We came back. There the book still was. We asked Jackie if we could purchase it. She said, did you get it over in that corner? We said yes. And she said, 66% off on Amazon. So it turned out to be like $25. And it started us on a beautiful journey. We ended up going to the Rocky Shore Lane, and that afternoon, low tide, till high tide, I would tell you, we sat on those rocks and read Jeffries out loud to us. And we not only fell in love with Richard Jeffries for his love of language, for his insistence on what he calls soul life, for the mystical intelligence that he dared to project, as well as the bedrock love that he held for the land itself and his own locale of walking every day the same path over and over again. Not only did we fall in love with Richard Jeffery, but I have to tell you, we fell in love with each other again in a way we couldn't have imagined, by reading together in sites, wild places, wild words. And I will just close this one section with this. How willingly I construe the path of all with flowers. How beautiful a delight to make the world joyous. The song should never remain silent, the dance never still, the laugh should sound like water which runs forever. How pleasant it would be each day to think, today I have done something that will render future generations more happy. I will search the world for beauty.
And so now I hope you'll just sit back where you are, perhaps close your eyes, and enjoy hearing the first chapter and a half or so of the story of my heart as read by your fellow community members here on the Palouse.
The story of my heart commences 17 years ago in the glow of youth. There were times every now and then when I felt the necessity of a strong inspiration of soul thought. My heart was dusty, parched for want of the rain of deep feeling. My mind arid and dry, for there is a dust which settles on the heart, as well as that which falls on a ledge. It is injurious to the mind as well as to the body to be always in one place and always surrounded by the same circumstances. A species of thick clothing slowly grows about the mind. The pores are choked. Little habits become part of existence, and by degrees the mind is enclosed in a husk. When this began to form, I felt eager to escape it, to throw off the heavy clothing, to drink deeply once more at the fresh foundations of life. An inspiration, a long deep breath of the pure air of thought, could alone give help to the heart.
There is a hill to which I used to resort at such periods. The labor of walking 3 miles to it, all the while gradually ascending, seemed to clear my blood of the heaviness accumulated at home. On a warm summer day, the slow continued rise required continual effort, which carried away the sense of oppression. The familiar everyday scene was soon out of sight. I came to other trees, meadows, and fields. I began to breathe a new air and to have a fresher aspiration. I restrained my soul till I reached the sward of the hill, Psyche, the soul that longed to be loose. I would write Psyche instead of soul to avoid meanings which have become attached to the word soul, but it is awkward to do so. Clumsy indeed are all words the moment the wooden stage of commonplace life is left. I restrained Psyche, my soul, till I reached and put my foot on the grass at the beginning of the green hill itself.
Moving up the short, the sweet green turf, at every step my heart seemed to obtain a wider horizon of feeling. With every inhalation of rich, pure air, a deeper desire. The very light of the sun was whiter and more brilliant here. By the time I had reached the summit, I had entirely forgotten the petty circumstances and the annoyances of existence. I felt myself, myself. There was an entrenchment on the summit, and going down into the foss, I walked round it slowly to recover breath. On the southwestern side, there was a spot where the outer bank had partially slipped, leaving a gap. There, the view was over a broad plain, beautiful with wheat, and enclosed by a perfect amphitheater of green hills. It's like he was living in the Palouse.
I know.
Through these hills, there was one narrow groove or pass southwards where the white clouds seemed to close in the horizon. Woods hid the scattered hamlets and farmhouses so that I was quite alone.
I was utterly alone with the sun and the earth. Lying down on the grass, I spoke in my soul to the earth, the sun, the air, and the distant sea far beyond sight. I thought of the earth's firmness. I felt it bear me up. Through the grassy couch there came an influence as if I could feel the great earth speaking to me.
I thought of the wandering air, its pureness, which in its beauty the air touched me and gave me something of itself. I spoke to the sea, though so far in my mind I saw it green at the rim of the earth and blue in deeper ocean. I desired to have its strength, its mastery and glory, mystery and glory. Then I addressed the sun, desiring the sole equivalent of his light and brilliance, his endurance and unwearied race. I turned to the blue heaven over, gazing into its depth, inhaling its exquisite color and sweetness. The rich blue of the unattainable flower of the sky drew my soul towards it, and there it rested, for pure color is rest of heart. By all these I prayed. I felt an emotion of the soul beyond all definition. Prayer is a puny thing to it, and the word is a rude sign to the feeling. But I know no other.
By the blue heaven, by the rolling sun bursting through untrodden space, a new ocean of ether every day unveiled, by the fresh and wandering air encompassing the world, by the sea sounding on the shore, the green sea, white flecked at the margin, and the deep ocean, by the strong earth under me. Then returning, I prayed by the sweet time, whose little flowers I touched with my hand, by the slender grass, by the crumble of dyed chalky earth, I took up and let fall through my fingers. Touching the crumble of earth, the blade of grass, the thyme flower, breathing the earth, circling air, thinking of the sea and the sky, holding out my hand for the sunbeams to touch it, prone on the sword in token of deep reverence. Thus I prayed that I might touch to the unutterable existence infinitely higher than deity.
With all the intensity of feeling which exalted me, all the intense communion I held with the earth, the sun and sky, the stars hidden by the light, with the ocean, in no manner can the thrilling depth of these feelings be written. With these I craved, as if they were the keys of an instrument or of an organ, with which I swelled forth the note of my soul, redoubling my own voice by their power. The great sun burning with light, the strong earth, dear earth, the warm sky, the pure air, the thought of ocean, the inexpressible beauty of all filled me with rapture and ecstasy and inflatus. With this inflatus, too, I prayed. Next to myself, I came and called myself my bodily existence. I held out my hand. The sunlight gleamed on the skin and the iridescent nails. I recalled the mystery and beauty of the flesh. I thought of the mind with which I could see the ocean 60 miles distant and gather to myself its glory. I thought of my inner existence, that consciousness which is called the soul. These, that is myself, I threw into the balance to weigh the prayer the heavier. My strength of body, mind, and soul, I flung into it. I put forth my strength. I wrestled and labored and toiled in might of prayer. The prayer, this soul emotion, was in itself not for an object. It was a passion. I hid my face in the grass. I was wholly prostrated. I lost myself in the wrestle. I was wrapped and carried away.
Becoming calmer, I returned to myself and thought, reclining in rapt thought, full of aspiration, steeped to the lips of my soul in desire. I did not know then, define or analyze or understand this. I see now that what I labored for was soul life, more soul nature, to be exalted, to be full of soul learning. Finally, I rose, walked half a mile or so along the summit of the hill eastwards to soothe myself and come to the common ways of life again. Had any shepherd accidentally seen me lying on the turf, he would only have thought that I was resting a few minutes. I made no outward show. Who could have imagined the whirlwind of passion that was going on within me as I reclined there? I was greatly exhausted when I returned home. Occasionally, I went upon the hill deliberately, deeming it good to do so. Then again, this craving carried me away up there of itself. Though the principal feeling was the same, there were variations in the mode in which it affected me.
Sometimes on lying down in the sward, I first looked up at the sky, grazing for a long time, till I could see deep into the azure and my eyes were full of color. When I turned my face to the grass in time, placing my hands at each side of my face so as to shut out everything behind myself, having dreamt deeply of the heaven above and felt the most glorious beauty of the day and remembering the old, old sea, which as it seemed to me was but just yonder at the edge, I now became lost and absorbed in the being of the existence of the universe. I fell down deep into the earth, under and high above into the sky, and farther still to the sun and the stars, still farther beyond the stars into the hollow of space, and losing thus my separateness of being came to seem like a part of the whole. Then I whispered to the earth beneath, through the grass in time, down to the depth of his ear, and again up to the starry space hidden beneath, behind the blue of the day. Traveling in an instant across the distant sea, I saw as if it was the actual vision of the palms and coconut trees, the bamboos of India, and the cedars of the extreme south. Like a lake with islands, the ocean lay before me, as clear and vivid as the plain beneath the mist in the midst of the amphitheater ghosts.
With the glory of the great sea, I said, with the firm, solid, and sustaining earth, the depth, distance, and expanse of ether, the age, timelessness, and ceaseless motion of the ocean, the stars and the unknown in space, by all those things which are most powerfully known to me, and by those which exist, but of which I have no idea whatever, I pray. Further, by my own soul, that secret existence which, above all other things, bears the nearest resemblance to this ideal of spirit, infinitely nearer than earth, sun, or star. Speaking by an inclination toward, not in words, my soul prays that I may have something from each of this, that I may gather a flower from them, that I may have in myself the secret and meaning of the earth, the golden sun, the light, the foam-flecked sea. Let my soul become enlarged. I am not enough. I am little and contemptible. I desire a greatness of soul, an irradiance of mind, a deeper insight, a broader hope. Give me power of soul so that I may actually affect by its will that which I strive for.
In summer, I went out into the fields and let my soul inspire these thoughts under the trees, standing against the trunk or looking up to the branches of the sky. If trees could speak, hundreds of them would say, I had had these soul emotions under them. Leaning against both the oak's massive trunk and feeling the rough bark and the lichen at my back, looking southwards over the grassy fields, cowslip yellow, at the woods on the slope, I thought my desire of deeper soul life. Or under the green firs, looking upwards, the sky was more deeply blue at their tops. Then the brake fern was unrolling, the doves cooing, the thickets astir, the late ash leaves coming forth. Under the shapely rounded elms, by the hawthorn bushes and hazel, everywhere the same deep desire for the soul nature. To have from all green things and from the sunlight the inner meaning which was not yet known to them, that I might be full of light as the woods of the sun's rays. Just to touch the lichened bark of a tree or the end of a spray projecting over the path as I walked, seem to repeat the same prayer in me.
The long-lived summer days dried and warmed the turf and meadows. I used to lie down in the solitary corner at full length on my back, so as to feel the embrace of the earth. The grass stood high above me, and the shadows of the tree branches danced on my face. I looked up at the sky, the clock-closed eyes of bed, the dazzling light. Bees buzzed over me. Sometimes a butterfly passed. There was a hum in the air. Green finches sang in the hedge. Gradually entering into the intense life of the summer days, a life which burned around as if every grass blade and leaf were a torch. I came to feel the long-drawn life of earth back into the dimmest past, while the sun at the moment was warm on me. Sisistris, on the most ancient sands of the south, in ancient, ancient days, was conscious of himself and of the sun. This sunlight linked me through the ages to that past consciousness. From all the ages, my soul desired to take that soul life, which had flowed through them as the sunbeams had continually pulled under. As the hot sands take up the heat, so I would take up that soul energy. Dreamy in appearance, I was breathing full of existence. I was aware of the grass blades, flowers, the leaves on hawthorn and tree. I seemed to live more largely through them, as if each were a pore through which I drank. The grass always called and leaped, the green finches sang, the blackbirds happily fluted. All the air hummed with life. I was plunged deep in existence, and with all that existence, I prayed.
Through every grass blade and a thousand grasses, through the million leaves veined and edge cut on bush and tree, through the song notes and the marked feathers of the birds, through the insects' hum and the color of the butterflies, through the soft, warm air, the flecks of clouds dissolving, I used them all for prayer. With all the energy the sunbeams had poured unwearied on the earth, since this Roses was conscious of them on the ancient sands, with all the life that had been lived by vigorous man and beauteous woman since first in dearest Greece the dream of gods was woven, with all the soul life that had flowed a long stream down to me, I prayed that I might have a soul more equal to, far beyond my conception of, these things of past, the present, and the fullness of all life, not only equal to these, but beyond, higher and more powerful than I could imagine, that I might take from all their energy, grandeur, and beauty, and gather it into me, that my soul might be more than the cosmos of life.
I prayed the glowing clouds of sunset and the soft light of the first star coming through the violet sky. At night with the stars according to the season, now with the Pleiades, now with the Swan or Burning Sirius, and broad Orion's whole constellation. Red Albert, Aldebaran, Arcturus, and the Northern Crown. With the Morning Star, the Light Bringer, once now and then when I saw it, a white gold ball in the violet purple sky, or framed about the pale summer vapor floating away as red streaks shot horizontally in the east. A diffused saffron ascended into the luminous upper azure.
The disk of the sun rose over the hill, fluctuating with throbs of light. His chest heaved in fervor of brilliance. All the glory of the sunrise filled me with broader and furnace-like vehemence of prayer, that I might have the deepest of soul life, the deepest of all, deeper far than all the greatness of the visible universe and even of the invisible, that I might have the fullness of soul till now unknown and utterly beyond my own conception. In the deepest darkness of the night, the same thought rose in my mind as in the bright light of noontide. What is there which I have not used to strengthen the same emotion?
Sometimes I went to a deep, narrow valley in the hills, silent and solitary. The sky crossed from side to side like a roof supported on two walls of green. Sparrows chirped in the wheat at the verge above, their calls falling like the twittering of swallows from the air. There was no other sound. The short grass was dried gray as it grew by the heat. The sun hung over the narrow vale as if it had been put there by hand. Burning, burning, the sun glowed on the sward at the foot of the slope where these thoughts burned into me. How many, many years, how many cycles of years, how many bundles of cycles of years had the sun glowed down thus on that hollow? Since it was formed, how long? Since it was worn and shaped groove-like in the flanks of the hills by mighty forces which had ebbed, alone with the sun which glowed on the work when it was done, I saw back through space to the old time of tree ferns, of the lizard flying through the air, of the lizard dragon wallowing in sea foam, the mountainous creatures, twice elephantine, feeding on the land, all the crooked sequence of life, the dragon fly which passed me, traced a continuous descent from the fly marked on stone in those days. The immense time lifted me like a wave rolling under a boat. My mind seemed to raise itself as a swell of the cycles came. It felt strong with the power of the ages. With all that time and power, I prayed that I might have in my soul the intellectual part of it, the idea, the thought, like a shuttle the mind shot to and fro, the past and the present in an instant.
Full to the brim of the wondrous past, I felt the wondrous present. For the day, the very moment I breathed, that second of time then in the valley was as marvelous, as grand, as all that had gone before. Now, this moment was the wonder and the glory. Now, this moment was exceedingly wonderful. Now, this moment gave me all the thought, all the idea, all the soul expressed in the cosmos around me. Give me still more. For the interminable universe, past and present, is but earth. Give me the unknown soul, wholly apart from it, the soul of which I know only that when I touch the ground, when the sunlight touches my hand, it is not there. Therefore, the heart looks into space, to be away from earth. With all the cycles and the sunlight streaming through them, with all that is meant by the present, I thought, in the deep veil, and prayed.
There was a secluded spring to which I sometimes went to drink the pure water, lifting it in the hollow of my hand, drinking the lucid water, clear as light itself in solution. I absorbed the beauty and purity of it. I drank the thought of the element. I desired soul nature, pure and limpid. When I saw the sparkling dew on the grass, a rainbow broken into drops. It called up the same thought prayer. The stormy wind, whose sudden twists laid the trees on the ground, woke the same feeling. My heart shouted with it. The soft summer air which entered when I opened my window in the morning breathed the same sweet desire. At night, before sleeping, I always looked out at the shadowy trees, the hills looming indistinctly in the dark, a star seen between the drifting clouds, prayer of soul life always. I chose the highest room, bare and gaunt, because as I sat at work, I could look out and see more of the wide earth, more of the dome of the sky, and could think my desire through these. When the crescent of the new moon shone, all the old thoughts were renewed.
All the succeeding incidents of the year repeated my prayer as I noted them. The first green leaf on the hawthorn, the first spike of meadow grass, the first song of the nightingale, the green ear of wheat. I spoke it with the ear of wheat as the sun tinted it, gold. With the whitening barley, again with the red gold spots of autumn on the beach, the buff oak leaves, and the gossamer dew waited. All the larks over the green corn sang it for me. All the deer swallows. The green leaves rustled it. The green brook flags waved it. The swallows took it with them to repeat it for me in distant lands. By the running brook I meditated it. A flash of sunlight here in the curve. A flicker yonder on the ripples. The birds bathing in the sandy shallow, the rush of falling water. As the brook ran winding through the meadow, so one thought ran winding through my days.
The sciences I studied never checked it for a moment. nor did the books of old philosophy. The sun was stronger than science, the hills more than philosophy. Twice circumstances gave me a brief view of the sea. Then the passion rose, tumultuous as the waves. It was very bitter to me to leave the sea.
Sometimes I spent the whole day walking over the hills, searching for it, as if the labor of walking would force it from the ground. I remained in the woods for hours, among the ash, sprays, and the fluttering of the ring doves at their nests, the scent of pines here and there, dreaming my prayer.
My work was most uncongenial and useless, but even then, sometimes a gleam of sunlight on the wall, the buzz of a bee at the window, would bring the thought to me, only to make me miserable, for it was a waste of golden time while the rich sunlight streamed on hill and plain.
There was a wrenching of the mind, a straining of the mental sinews. I was forced to do this. My mind was yonder. Weariness, exhaustion, nerve illness often ensued. The insults which are showered on poverty, long struggle of labor, the heavy pressure of circumstances, the unhappiness, only stayed the expression of feeling. It was always there. Often in the streets of London, as the red sunset flamed over the houses, the old thought, the old prayer came. Not only in grassy fields with green leaf and running brook did this constant desire find renewing. More deeply still, with living human beauty, the perfection of form, the simple fact of form, ravished and always will ravish my way. In this lies the outcome and end of all the loveliness of sunshine and green leaf, of flowers, pure water, and sweet air. This is embodiment and highest expression. The scattered, uncertain, and designless loveliness of tree and sunlight brought to shape. Through this beauty I prayed deepest and longest, and down to this hour. The shape, the divine idea of that shape, the swelling muscle or the dreamy limb, strong sinew or curve of bust, Aphrodite or Hercules, it is the same. That I may have the soul life, the soul nature, let divine beauty bring me divine soul. Sortnumian, white Greek, delicate Italian, massive Scandinavian, and all the exquisite pleasure the form gave and gives, to me, immediately becomes intense prayer.
Shaped like these, how despicable in comparison I am. To be shapely of form is so infinitely beyond wealth, power, fame, all that ambition can give, that these are dust before it. Unless of the human form, no pictures hold me. The rest are flat surfaces. So too with the other arts. They are dead, the potters, the architect. Meaningless, stony, and some repellent. Like the cold touch of porcelain. No prayer with these. Only the human form and art could raise it, and most in statuary. I have seen so little good statuary, it is a regret to me. Still, that I have is beyond all other art. Fragments here, a bust yonder, the broken pieces brought from Greece. Copies, plaster cast, a memory of an Aphrodite, of a Persephone, of an Apollo, that is all. But even drawings of statuary will raise the prayer. These statues were like myself, full of a thought, forever about to bust forth as a bud, yet silent in the same attitude. Give me to live the soul life they express, the smallest fragment of marble carved in the shape of the human arm will wake the desire I felt in my field prayer.
If I got more than my share of the burdens, well, I don't care, 'cause I got more than my share of love. and I'm weary, and I can't rest. I remember that I've been blessed, 'cause I got more than my share of love. I thank my family.
I thank my family.
I thank my friends.
Hello, you've been listening to Yin Radio. That was a song called More Than My Share by Crystal Spring and Carper. And the reading you heard before was a public participatory reading of the Robert Jeffries book, The Story of My Heart, as has been republished with introductions and commentary by Terry Tempest Williams, Brooke Williams, and Scott Slovic. And that was again held at the 1912 Center earlier this week. As we bring things down to a close here in terms of today's Yin broadcast, The Stories of Our Heart, an interview and reading with Terry Tempest Williams, I wanted to play for you a beautiful excerpt from the reading where a visiting scholar from Japan, Zhao Jing, does a reading of Terry Tempest's introduction to Richard Jeffries. And I want to make a huge apology because I do have a terrible time with names, and I believe I've been calling him Robert Jeffries during this time, and my sincere apologies. It is Richard Jeffries, and I'm just coming to terms with that fact here now, and this is just a lifetime issue of mine that names themselves are difficult for me. That being said, my sincere apologies for that. It is Richard Jeffries, The Story of My Heart. And what you are about to hear is Zhao Jing reading a selection that she chose from Terry Tempest's introduction to the book. And it's just a beautiful selection. And she gives a thanks to Terry Tempest Williams for inspiration in this reading.
My English is not good, but I want to say thank you for everything. Because your work really encouraged me to read English, to study English very hard, so I want to say thank you. So I want to read the Terry Tempest work, 24 pages. Richard Jeffries felt the world deeply and dared to confront the mysteries. He was relentless in his quest to name the inevitable. He was the lover of beauty. This is what we forget. Beauty is what opens our eyes to love. Love ignites passion, and passion is what pulls us toward the future, fraught with risk and uncertainty. He was a man who lived with eyes wide open. I lived in looking. Richard Jeffries said, "May we not over our game." Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here with us today on Yin Radio. We've been doing the readings of Terry Tempest Williams, and it's just been a wonderful, wonderful time, and I'm deeply grateful for this, and I apologize for not getting Richard Jeffries' name correct this entire time. It is Richard Jeffries and not Robert Jeffries. And so, as we come to a close, I just want to make sure that you have a way to find Terry Tempest online. You can go to her website, which is coyoteclan.com. That's coyoteclan.com. And The most recent book that she and her husband Brooke have put together is a republication of Richard Jefferies' The Story of My Heart, with an introduction and commentary throughout, an additional word at the end by Scott Slovic. And another more recent book is When Women Were Birds, which is just a beautiful read. And so I hope, if you haven't already had a chance to invest in her readings, that you will do so, that you will be inspired to do so today. Let's see here. Before we close, then, I just wanted to let you know that our next broadcast, we broadcast every other Sunday. We alternate with Peace Radio. And so our next broadcast will be October 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. again. And that will be with Carolyn Finney. And because of the beautiful parallels between the work of these two authors, I do just want to give you a little synopsis from her book, which is Black Faces, White Spaces, Reimagining the Relationship of African Americans to the Great Outdoors. And so I'm going to read a quick little introduction from her book so you have an idea of what to expect on our next DN broadcast. She says, in March of 2007, I was invited to the University of Vermont to speak to the academic community about the intersection of race and the environment. I had given versions of this talk at other universities where, with the exception of a few historically black colleges in the South, my audience was largely white. While the content of my talks did not change, I always found it interesting the way in which different audiences collectively responded to my assertions about the black experience and the mainstream environmental movement in the United States. Whether the audience was predominantly white, black, or a mix of diverse individuals, responses were often a combination of surprise, anger, curiosity, and hope. To a lesser extent, and perhaps this is because people were less likely to reveal these feelings in a public setting, I could also sense doubt, denial, and even dismissal. In any case, there was always much back and forth between myself and audience members as we navigated the sometimes emotionally tumultuous waters of race. Along with sharing some facts and findings from my empirical research, I luxuriated in sharing stories about some of the people I was privileged to have interviewed. I found that personalizing the discussion about race and environment, either with my own stories or the stories of others, was a great way to invite people into the conversation by reminding them that this isn't or it wasn't just a black, white, or brown experience. It was a human experience. And so I hope you'll join us on our next broadcast on October 28th with Carolyn Finney, essentially continuing this discussion of our national parks, our public lands, and about the voices that need to be heard throughout. Again, you've been listening to Yin Radio. You can find us online at yinradioblog.wordpress.com to find out about upcoming sessions, as well as finding and listening to the archives of past sessions. Thanks again so much to Terry Tempest Williams for being with us and interviewing for today, and for the beautiful reading that our community was a part of this week. And I hope you all enjoy a beautiful day, and we'll talk to you soon.